A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Hall. Hope you've had a great week so far. Hopefully it was made better by the fact that Liverpool actually won a game of footy, which was boss. Just to let you know straight off the bat, I've got a little deal for you podcast listeners. All these shows that you're about to hear clips from come from Red Men Plus. All of our shows on Red Men Plus are available both in video and podcast forms. Obviously, you guys are podcast listeners, so we've got a little deal just for you. If you sign up to redmenplus.com, go over there right now and sign up as a yearly club captain subscriber. That would usually cost you £50 for the entire year. However, on the payment screen, if you use the code weekly, W-E-E-K-L-Y, you can get the yearly subscription for just £25, so half price, absolute bargain for you. You get all these shows each and every week in video and podcast forms, and I'm sure you would enjoy them. Speaking of enjoying ourselves then, yeah, it was brilliant, brilliant, brilliant to have a final word show after Liverpool had won a game. Paul Machen, John Reid, Annie and Young were in the studio to discuss the Merseyside derby win, and there's a little clip from that show.
That midfield, I was a little concerned because I saw, you know, they went with the same midfield three in Idrissa Gana Gueye, Anana and Decore, Ian. And I looked at the physicality and the gnarl of that midfield, and I was like, ah, shit. I was honestly, and it's weird because I haven't said this in a long while, I was a little envious of that midfield when I saw, you know, I saw them together, because I was like, they kind of all have a lot of the elements that Liverpool have lacked from their midfield this season, particularly Anana, who he's been a bit up and down, but when he's on his game, We don't really have loads of lads like that. But honestly, when you consider what the midfield, you know, Fabinho's been in terrible form. Jordan Henderson's really struggled, certainly post-World Cup, something he's even talked about himself. And we've got this 18-year-old kid playing his first ever game as a left of a midfield three. they should have given us more of a game, but yeah, for Everton, It just didn't work at all.
No, it didn't work. And I think, strangely, I think Everton underestimated Liverpool last night. I think they thought they were coming to play the Liverpool that we've seen the past 3 months. They were expecting that Liverpool to turn up. And I don't know what's been said during the week. I don't know whether the week off has done us good. But like I said, we were up for that game. Jordan Henderson looked like a player with something to prove last night. And he proved it last night. He was absolutely brilliant. You could have given five people man of the match last night. But the midfield, as you were, I was concerned when that midfield was announced. I thought, they're going to overrun us there. They're going to out-physical us. But they never did any of that. It's like, it was almost like their midfield didn't turn up last night. I didn't think they were good at all last night.
Yeah, we've kind of hinted around them, but I loved so many of our midfield performances. And I think there was a real, particularly when, you know, Thiago's not playing, John, and you know, we were walking towards the game and we said, well, we're doing this back into tag one in, one out kind of stuff. Chris referred to it as a bit like a wrestling tag team match. You had like a bit of a hot tag. Someone drags themselves to the corner and just tags someone else in just as they're about to collapse in a heap. But actually, in fairness, we had Jota back, Van Dijk back, Firmino back all on the bench. So there was a real psychological lift there. And Klopp made a big decision. And I think we've looked at a couple of weeks of stuff now where we've gone, maybe he's had enough of Jordan Henderson. Maybe he's had enough of Fabinho. Whereas, actually, what we saw was these players have been running to the ground. Mm. And actually, what we're seeing now is that we're reaping the rewards of taking them out the firing line for a couple of weeks, trying to put something more back into the legs, back into the tank. And we'll talk about Fabinho in a second, but Jordan Henderson in particular, because he mentioned, I just thought he was brilliant. I just thought that was a Jordan Henderson 8 performance all day.
Yeah, he looked more like the player we've seen for sort of the last 4 or 5 years. And certainly if you go back sort of maybe pre-2020 type thing, pre-COVID, the manager called him a one-man pressing machine in his post-match, which I thought was extremely apt. He was just popping up everywhere and sort of, you know, doing all the sorts of hard yards for everybody and filling the cracks in. And there was so many times on that right-hand side where he was sort of in the channel, either covering for Salah or covering for Trent. And just like if a ball, sort of if a pass went awry, he'd sort of pick it up and knit it back together. And even sort of the bullishness of him sort of around the area. I think you can always sort of tell if Henderson's playing well by, is he popping up at the edge of the box trying to take shots? Yeah. You know what I mean? And there was a lot of that last night for him, you know, being involved in the attack, as well as doing all sorts of the stuff that we sort of want him in the team for, sort of covering for other players. But, you know, real sort of captain's performance. He it wasn't so much that he looked re-energised in the sense of physically, it's just that in sort of his mentality as well, he clearly wanted to, you know, put himself about in the game.
Mm. I just thought it was the best our right side has functioned all season, Ian. You know, and I was looking at the heat maps, which I've got, and it allows Trent to be Trent. He gets back and he does the dirty work really well as well. There's a couple of times where he just goes back in and puts a really solid foot in. But Henderson plays a real supportive tissue role. Trent's all the way up and down the right-hand side. Salah gets to come and have a real impact in the game as well. And Jordan just ties it all together. He's their pass at all times. It's that you've not just got Trent twatting it down the line and then Salah's coming short to get it. If he's doing that, then Henderson's there for the quick knockoff. And again, when you've got that, you can build a bridgehead, which means Trent can get up and he's not being left totally exposed. You're Jordan Henderson getting back in, doing some of the covering as well. And that's the whole thing. You know, Trent had a good game. I thought Mo had one of his better games this season, and I thought it was facilitated by Henderson.
Well, when we talk about players being tired as well, we sometimes forget to talk about how tired they are mentally as well. The players just made better decisions last night. The amount of our decision making this year has been poor at times. Yeah. Sometimes we're just forcing it. Like Trent has been crossing the ball for me far too early this season. He's just been lumping it in when there's been nobody there. Last night he was coming in when there was no option there and he was taking a bit more time on the ball, and that comes from having making better decisions, having a bit more time to think. Like I said, I think Everton helped us because they gave us more time on the ball. We probably had more all season, I think, last night. But it was just a better all-round performance from us. And I think it's also the best we've managed the game all season. At no point did I think we were in danger last night. After that first goal went in, I didn't think we were ever in danger of conceding a goal then.
Yeah, I thought it was just sticking with you. I thought Fabinho was improved. He still feels a little leggy in things.
Yeah.
But what I saw was the commitment back. He was right at the limits of what I think he was physically capable of doing at times, particularly toward the end of the game. But he was actually still getting on the end of stuff. You know, he was being physical again. He was being combative. And that's kind of what I need to see from Fabinho. I don't like a passive Fabinho in the midfield, because when he's passive, it gives the opposition too much confidence that they can walk through the middle of the team.
I think it helped that he had two much better performing midfielders with him last night as well, because he's had to do a lot more work than what he should have done over the past definitely the last 6 months. He's been overworked. He's been having to make decisions he wouldn't normally come in. He's been coming in, going for challenges that normally he'd stand off and then let that player come to him. He didn't have to do any of that last night. To get the Fabinho back from 12, 18, 2 years ago, it's going to take a lot of work. But if we've just started that process now and we put better players around them and we get better performances around them, we'll get them back because that player's still there. You don't just stop being a very good player, world-class player. It doesn't happen. Yeah. The ability is still there. It's the old forms, temporary, class is permanent, isn't it?
I completely agree on that. And I think that was one of the things where I was really encouraged by Klopp's press conference. But the problem was that he said a lot of the right things lately and then they've not been backed up by the players on the pitch. This was a perfect example of him talking about those kind of things. He was very, very staunch in his defence of Jordan Henderson, because that was where lots of the questions were leaning towards. But that point, and kind of where my attitude's been in recent weeks of this, John. It's hard because we take it all so personally when Liverpool aren't performing. But these are brilliant footballers. Odds are they were going to recover some semblance of form at some point. I'm glad it was the Merseyside derby, because if they hadn't, I can't imagine that. I mean, we're already living in the darkest timeline. I think I can't even imagine what kind of dystopian sci-fi future it would have been if we'd lost the derby as well. But we needed Henderson and we needed Fabinho to step up. And I really think they did.
Yeah, you've got to, you know, it's never as bad as what you think, and it's never, you know, there's always something you could be doing when things are going great, as they say. And, you know, those players have done a lot. You know, there's a lot of, I think, just because of the way the world's gone in terms of like FIFA and whatever, you know, and just the general quickening of the pace of modern life, I think people forget the sort of cultural value having some of these people around. And it's weird that we've all sort of mentioned mentality and sort of like mental restoration in terms of our team, and you could apply that to Everton as well. But having people like him around, just his attitude, and, you know, you've seen it sort of when Lallana walked out the club and how sort of emotional everyone was in terms of like what he brought to the team and the dressing room and stuff. You hear a lot of them talk about it, you know, sort of off the pitch in pre-season and stuff, sort of like people who maybe don't feature as heavily in the team but who are very important to the dressing room, like Adrian. There's a lot of that, and you can't underplay that. You know, Henderson now, I don't know if he has played in the most derbies, but he can't be far off like the all-time derby appearances, if you like, in terms of playing for Liverpool. So to bring all that back to the pitch and bring that to bear, you know, he knows how to perform, and that he's won everything in the game. You know, he's been in all those big matches. And, you know, he knows how to marshal a team through things, and that's not something that you forget. You know, you can lose your form, as sort of Ian alluded to. You know, you can be tired or worn out or whatever, and maybe you can't do it for as long, you know, in terms of over an extended period in the season, but you're not going to forget all those things that have pulled you through. And he knows all that. He knows all the dark arts. And I think you got to see it, as you say. I think he covered... I agree with sort of your sentiments around Fabinho, that I think he sort of helped Fabinho through it. I don't want to say he coached him through it, because he's a senior professional as well, but you know what I mean? He let him sort of have a 6 out of 10, but it came off more like an 8, if you know what I mean, like an 8 out of 10.
We have to talk about Stefan Bacetic, who I might be my favourite Liverpool player at the moment. I genuinely watch Stefan Bacetic, and I marvel at how good he is. And I thought Jürgen did a good job to kind of try his best to give him the praise that he's due, because you want to big these lads up. But at the same time, I'm going to go, okay, well, look, Henderson, Fabinho, and the way everyone played together was the most important thing. But okay, look, even I, who don't like to single out individuals for praise, can say Stefan Bacetic was good. I thought he was great, Ian. I just, you know, I think, again, Klopp stressing, he's not played that position before. And he even said in one of the post-match press conferences, we bought him as a centre-back. He's been playing as the 6, and then we moved him into the 8 for one of the 8s for the derby. And he shone in everything you wanted him to. You know, he was quick on the ball. His quickness of thought was really evident. The way he moved the ball, the way he moved himself, how committed he was in the tackle as well. I've seen a lot of like, I've seen bits of Thiago, I'm seeing bits of Steven Gerrard in there as well, very early. But at 18 years old, I can't think of many footballers who've gone into that environment and held their own quite in the way that he did.
I'm going to name another midfielder now. He reminded me of Gini last night. Gini Wijnaldum. He was like, we've been wanting to replace Gini for 2 years, and it looked like they did it last night. The way he did all the ugly stuff as well as the pretty stuff, Gini, and he never got the credit for it from a lot of our fans, and that was the stuff that Bacetic was doing last night. He was one solid shot away from getting an assist last night as well. He was just absolutely incredible. If you had never watched a game of football before and you said, you'd tell me who's the 18-year-old on that pitch last night, you would not have been able to pick him out. He looked like he'd been playing in that midfield for 10 years last night.
You'd have been, it's the really skinny kid on the side of the field. Like, but no, I take it fucking perfectly. Because he doesn't look like he should be able to hold his own in that. And we talked about that Everton midfield. That's a physical Everton midfield, John. Really is. What I loved about it was he had no fear. So he was happy to throw his body on the line in certain situations. But actually, again, in how he used the ball, Everton were trying to cut his passing out, because we were playing the ball to him in some really tricky situations. And the obvious thing to do is go back, or pick an ease back, or let it run, you know, go with certain directions. He was like, again, the Thiago, like, shuffle where you drop your shoulder and go the opposite direction. in the heart of midfield, in situations where when you get that wrong, you potentially leave your entire team exposed. But he trusted in himself. And he actually was a bit like going, no, I'm good enough to do this against you. And I just thought that was so really admirable, I thought, in his performance.
Yeah, he doesn't... I don't know whether you could call it sort of naivety, if you like, because I don't know if it is that, but... You know, he didn't seem to wear the occasion, did he? You know what I mean? He didn't go in sort of thinking, Christ, I'm playing a new position, or Christ, this is a big match, you know, in terms of like local, you know, local pride and stuff. He just seemed to play his game, and, you know, he sort of got, you know, again, you've both sort of alluded to it, he sort of got a bit of everything, hasn't he? He's very, you know, the thing I got from him last night was that he was very old school. Like, I feel like if this was 2001 and we were playing a 4-4-2, he'd thrive, you know what I mean? In that Steven Gerrard, young Steven Gerrard mould. He just brought a bit of evidence to it, and I never got the sense, which is always sort of the thing in these games, of being nervous when he had the ball. You know, as much as I love him, you know, like there's times when Matip had the ball, and even times when Trent had the ball in certain situations, I was like, just get rid of this, just absolutely hoof it down the pitch. And I never got that from him, which I always think is the mark of a confidence with a player, you know, that you trust them with having the ball at his feet and stuff. And as you sort of said, some of the passing as well, it wasn't just as if he was passing it 5 yards sideways type thing. He was playing people in, there was some cross balls across the pitch and stuff. You know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of things that he did that you don't do unless you feel really assured, which I didn't know he'd never played that position. All the sorts of post-match stuff from the manager of, you know, he's bought him as a centre-half and stuff was all news to me. So seeing that from him, I think was brilliant.
Nice one, Paul, and the boys there. Yeah, isn't it great when Liverpool not only win a game of footy, but also beat Everton? Absolutely fantastic. Let the good times continue. Fingers crossed. Moving on then, later on that very day on RedmenPlus.com, the Bias Football Podcast was released. It was Paul, it was Chris, it was Dan, and it was me having a good old chat about Pep Guardiola. We chatted about Mikel Arteta. We did the Bell End of the Week Award. We did our Begrudging Respect of the Week Award. I love the Bias Football Podcast. It lets us talk about other teams, but doing it with, yeah, a rose-tinted glasses, Liverpool-tinted glasses, if you will. Yeah, here's a clip from that very show.
It was a bad weekend for the refs. That Suchek handball is...
Save.
Good save.
It's a good save.
Gets Joe Hart never would have saved that down to his left. He would have had no chance down there. No chance down there.
That's shocking. Brentford equaliser, it's hilarious.
Well, it's not the fact that what's mad, I was watching the highlights. I was like, okay, they're going back. Okay, that makes sense. Oh, they're drawing the lines on the second one. Oh, that's weird. He'll go back in a minute and draw the line on the, you know, the lad who's offside. And just never did.
On the lad that's clearly offside.
Just never did. I was like, oh, okay, that's fine, I suppose.
Spent 3 minutes on that as well.
But it was the other one. They were looking at the second phase and they just forgot to see. They were checking if like Tony was offside or something for ages. And the lad who was just offside, where you didn't even need a line to see he was offside. Oh, no, it's fine. Fucking Lee Mason.
Well, I love the fact that they just went, Lee Mason, forgot to draw the lines. And most people went, most people who know football went, fucking Lee Mason.
Of course it was Lee Mason.
Right, everyone crack on with the day. Mason, he's fucking incompetent.
Not what we can do here.
He's fucking incompetent, so we expect that. Whereas people who don't, like younger fans, have gone, well, this is an outrage. Like, yeah, it should be an absolute outrage.
But also, Lee Mason.
Isn't Lee Mason like just a VAR ref now? He's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. That wasn't the worst VAR decision, though, to be honest. The next one was worse, the Brighton one, where he drew it off the wrong fella. It was the best thing ever. So the lad's onside, and you can clearly see it's Gay who's playing him on. I was like, why is the... And the line comes from the other defender, and it's just like he's about an inch offside.
Do you reckon there's like the Premier League have got something like really bad about to come out, and they've just gone to the refs, just do us a solid here? You know, like how, like again, like in government, when there was a major, like major issue that we really need to get angry about.
We need you to fall on your sword.
Someone would go and drive to a fucking castle. You know what I mean? Like, and we'd all be angry about someone driving to a castle instead of like all this, like billions of pounds wasted on protective stuff.
PPE.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that's a lot of really, really shit. Obvious refereeing errors in a very short space of time.
We probably need to check the Premier League website for any statements that were released on Saturday.
Wasn't there another one? Oh, the lad who sent the Wolves guy off.
Yeah, because he was the third
Because two players ran towards him and he was the third one.
So Mina was the third person he ran towards.
Second yellow.
And he said to Ruben Evans, because he was the third person who ran over. I was like, why did you put the first two?
Someone else got booked for being the third person.
It wasn't a second yellow. Yeah, someone got booked the day after, I think. And, and even his first yellow was soft at best. So it was, the refs are just incompetent. I can't think of a good one anymore.
I did think about this, and I know VAR chat generally is like, should it be, should it not be, blah blah blah. It's so fucking boring. It's not going anywhere. But it did make me think, like, what was the point, really? Because do you remember saying when it first came out, I said it will have jumped the shark for me when someone says, "Oh, they all even themselves out in the end," because we fucking had that already. Mm. We had like, oh, you know, they all balance out in the end. You bring in technology to get decisions right, but if you're then getting them wrong still, then save yourselves a ton of money and a ton of effort and all that shit and just crack on. I don't mind that. The only thing I don't mind about it is that idea of when you can see the goal, there is that like slim chance that you hold on for a minute and it might get chalked off, which I don't mind about the whole VAR experience, being on the, when you're on the receiving end and someone's scoring against you. But like
one thing I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I'll just put it on the record, I fucking hate VAR. I think it's shit and it shouldn't have been introduced. That's out the way.
There you go.
What I will say is that they have probably got a lot more decisions right than wrong for a start, and there have been loads of goals that would have stood that they haven't. And I think we sometimes focus on the ones they get wrong and not the hundreds that we've seen, maybe near thousands, where the linesman would have just got it wrong. That's the big problem with it.
You're right on that, but has it taken away more than that gives us in terms of that joyous moment? Yes, it has. You know what I mean? It's taken away the amount of time it takes to sort of get decisions right just saps the energy out of football matches.
I just can't be arsed having a race to see like who's first to look for the VAR board or at the line.
I like VAR. In terms of, I like the concept of it and I think it should exist because I think it's too important.
Contrary.
No, but let me finish. When they use it and they can use it, they have given a foolproof system to fools, and it's not foolproof. You can draw, like the UEFA offsides where it's automatic. That in theory is foolproof. It's going to do your head in sometimes because someone's knee is going to be an inch offside, but it doesn't rely on a fucking incompetent idiot picking the right fella to draw a line off, or shock horror, even deciding to draw the line in the first place. If you're going to use it, if you're going to use technology, you trust the technology. Why on earth, in a multi-million, even billion-pound industry, are we still relying on a lad to draw a line? And bear in mind, the reason he's in the VAR hut is because someone's decided he's not good enough to be on the pitch. So who the fuck decided, you know what, Lee Mason, he's the guy who decides where to do this, draw this line from.
Can I ask a question of the crowd? What finger does Lee Mason use to operate his mobile phone?
This one is right, index finger. 100%.
Absolutely.
And this is part of the
finger. He's got a flap phone. He's got a flap and it unflaps and then it's one finger scrolling.
Oh, had time on my phone then. but also, like, why did he need to be a referee to operate the equipment? Like, surely, like, honest to God, you could get my fucking 6-year-old kid to operate the equipment better than them. Just like I could operate the equipment better than my dad. Yeah. And a 20-year-old could operate it better than you. They literally don't need to be a referee to operate the equipment. They just need to understand the rules. The referee could be there to explain the fucking rules to them, but somebody else could operate the equipment.
Why do you think the shoe check one isn't on ball? Two people have decided that it's not on ball.
I think it was on ball for a start. But I think the referee said it was his taking the weight.
Yeah. But I get that if you're falling over in a challenge.
But he died.
If you're diving to save the ball, it's probably handball.
Yeah,
it's handball.
You know what reminds me of today, though? Did you see Howard Webb after the United Rashford Bruno Fernandes thing? And he said a really interesting but kind of odd. He went, "The game expects that to be given offside, so next time we'll give it offside." And I was like, "What?" He was like, "Because in theory, you could say he didn't actually break any offside law. He didn't go for the ball. He didn't interfere with play. But the game has told us that should be offside, so we're going to give it offside from now on." I was like, what type of rule book is this? Yeah. He's either the rule, no, what about the game? The rules of football will tell you if he's offside or not. He's offside.
Yeah, but nobody fucking knows.
That's what it's done. The thing that VAR has done is it's shown how fucking rubbish football's rules are. The offside rule in general, it's never a good rule.
We change rules during the season now.
Yeah.
That's the most bananas thing.
Rules should be photorealism, and what we've got is fucking watercolour paintings.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it. Like,
right, let's move it on.
All the board.
Arsenal, Man City next.
Yeah.
That's a point from the last two games. They lost to Everton, they've drawn with Brentford. No, nothing wrong with dropping points to Brentford, obviously.
Only the good teams do that.
Yeah.
And us.
This is huge for them, because I've gone from, I genuinely thought if City were going to catch them or they were going to be caught, then City would have picked up points last weekend. Mm-hmm. Would have seized upon that opportunity. But here we are. City is still stumbling. I have a big fear that Arsenal will just limp to the title because no one else can kind of get a good momentum up. But I don't know. What do we reckon? Do we reckon Arsenal are going to bottle it? Or
I'm sure. I don't know. I think bottle it's harsh. I don't think they're going to win the league. I don't think that's bottle. I think Man City is going to overtake them. Arsenal are going to have a good season, and I don't think it's going to be enough. They're going to run out of... It's interesting. I saw Dan Kenneth say they've only made 14 changes to the team all season. Mm. They've had this level of consistency where they've really been able to stick with the same team and get on with it. It's starting to feel like there's a little bit of... Not, I don't know if it's fatigue, teams maybe figuring a few different things out, how to play against Arsenal. They're getting respect now, where you used to think, don't respect Arsenal, get about them. Now teams are playing them like we respect them. We're happy to a bank of four, and we'll play them like a team who deserves a bit of top of the league-ness about them. And ultimately, and this might sound mad, but like, their best players are all kids. And I think at some point, relying on young players to get you through an entire season, I think that can be difficult. I think they need one or two lads, and all their experienced lads are their lesser players. You know, it's Granit Xhaka and whatever. Like, you know, in all right, but not brilliant. Their best players are Saka and Martinelli and Ødegaard. At some point, I do think you need that little bit of experience. He tried to do something in the window, didn't he? Went and got Jorginho in the end, but like, Sam, whatever. But I do think they're going to run out of legs.
Like, Thomas Partey, Jorginho, Zinchenko. Yeah, but Jesus coming back will be important.
Because
he's not going to come in and score more goals than Nketiah's been scoring. But it's whether it's just the boost of having him and can he improve their general level of attack and play or whatever. But yeah, it's that forever until they do it. You'd be mad to think they're definitely gonna do it.
Yeah.
But if they beat City, I see no reason why they won't. It might turn out that Man United are actually the nearest rivals, but I don't think they're ready for a sustained
push. I'm starting to fear for Arsenal in as much as I possibly can, which is very little, obviously. I just don't know anymore. I think a few weeks ago I was starting to think, do you know what, nothing's stopping them. And then a couple of dodgy, I think lesser performances, particularly the Everton one, they were miles off it, Everton. I think just you start seeing signs, and then you see City do what they did to Villa and just cruise past them and go, oh, we've seen it. We've seen this act before now. And as Liverpool fans, we're very well versed in what happens from here on out. And I don't know.
Remember when we stumbled against Leicester and West Ham?
Yes.
And City took advantage.
Clicked into it. And that's I think that might happen now. I feel
like that's this last weekend. City aren't as good as that City, by the way.
No.
But
they might not need to be, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think ours was as good as we ever were in our title sort of campaign. So I think City could just click into gear and it could really hurt Arsenal.
Yeah, I don't think City are that good, to be honest with you. I don't think they're anywhere near as good as those teams. You were saying there. Whether Arsenal will win the title, though, I'm not sure. Because a couple of good results, like if they were losses, both of them, I think, you know, they're in real issues. But I think just getting that draw at the weekend is probably massive for them. And I think they can limp to it.
Yeah.
I think they can limp to it.
We're back to that, aren't we? I'm not sure what I prefer. As long as United fuck up soon, that'd be great.
United are a funny one because I don't think they're very good either, but they've got that winning mentality thing going for them, which is mad because United, when they get good, they always have that.
Yeah. They've got it.
It's very United, isn't it?
Rashford's kind of carrying them through at the minute, and it's what Liverpool have lacked. Like, Salah's not been carrying us through with his goals. Haaland's been carrying them through. Arsenal have got it from all over the place. You know, Saka's in boss form, and Ketty's picked up the slack from Jesus. Trossard's come in and had an impact. Odegaard's been really good, but we just haven't scored goals. Yeah. So we look loads worse than we probably are in reality. But you're right, Weghorst, I'm glad that goal got
offside one the weekend, yeah.
I don't think he's very good either. But if he just starts to tick on, score a couple of goals, it would add to what they're doing. Hopefully, Yeah, I like Rashford. It's kind of funny how they hated him for a while because apparently you're not allowed to be a good person and a good footballer at the same time.
Concentrate on your footy.
Yeah, no, just carry on being a good person and then be good at footy, as it turns out.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Next up, it's Journo Inside Time. Yes, my favourite show, I say that each and every week. It was me, it was Goal.com's Neil Jones, and I asked Neil, about two players, Mason Mount and Ruben Neves, both been linked with moves to Liverpool in reports this week. So yeah, I got Neil Jones' insight on both of those players, and here's that very clip coming up right now. Hey everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV. Steve Hoare here, and yes, I have just spoken to Goal.com's Neil Jones once again for our Journo Inside show. I asked Neil about two midfielders who are being linked with moves to Liverpool. We've got Mason Mount of Chelsea and Ruben Neves of Wolverhampton Wanderers, both been yet reported to be interested in moves to Liverpool, or Liverpool interested in making moves for them. Go and check it out right now. Here is a clip of me and Neil from that very show. Absolutely, yeah. Right then, moving on. Part of that midfield overhaul we were speaking about, a couple of links again, or a couple of updates on stories. So we spoke a couple of weeks ago, Neil, about Mason Mount, and there was pretty genuine interest from pretty reliable source about Liverpool sniffing around Mason Mount. And you explained, you know, it isn't the first time they've done this. The latest reports this week was that his latest contract talks with Chelsea have gone nowhere. Stalemate, I think, was the term. He's after maybe a bit more money, or a bit more understanding of where Chelsea are going. Obviously, Chelsea have gone out and spent a lot of money on a lot of lads who play in a similar position to him. And I mean, like, a lot of money. Broke world record transfers and stuff in midfield. So, yeah, there's a lot going on at Chelsea, but it does feel like this one, you mentioned in the past, an opportunistic signing.
Yeah.
It feels like Mason Mount getting to this summer where he'll be into a final year of a contract. If he hasn't done something by then, I know Chelsea are very unorthodox now, they act, but even them, you would think, would say, right, it's now or never. You'd either go now because we can cash in, we are not losing someone who could make us 50 million quid for no money whatsoever. So it does feel like this one might have something coming towards when we get towards the summer, that this might be something that we're speaking about more often.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think you're right. There's no way Chelsea are going to let him run his contract down. You know, you look at what they've spent, you look at the way that they've done it, they are going to need to sell some players for good money. And, you know, they've got assets. Obviously, they've got, you know, Lukaku's still out on loan at the moment. I think they're obviously going to try and sell him. I think Ziyech is going to get sold. I'd be amazed.
If the fax machine worked, he might be whatever it was.
Pulisic, I think, will be sold. They've got Hudson-Odoi, I think, out on loan.
Conor Gallagher,
yeah. I mean, I would be amazed that, you know, Aubameyang's going to leave and get off the wage bill, probably not sold. Probably going to let him go, but you know, I wouldn't be amazed if they cashed in on Koulibaly. You know, he's not really worked out. You know, players that haven't been brought in really by this, you know, this ownership. I know Koulibaly is an exception in that sense, but they're having a homegrown player who's cost them nothing, who's not on massive wages by all accounts. I think it's under 100,000 a week. Say that, not a massive wages. I'll take it. But he's not one of the big earners of the club. I think that's what he wants to be. He wants to be one of the top earners. He's not one of the big earners, so you're not. The outlay that Chelsea have put into this player isn't huge. They could potentially cash in, you know, like you say, 40, 50 million. I think an England international, player who's won the Champions League, you know, been a big part of the club. It would be appealing if he hasn't agreed a new contract. I mean, it was a link this morning, wasn't it, or yesterday? I think that they were asking to be kept abreast of Bellingham situation, which I don't think that does much for Mason Mount's chances if Chelsea were looking at signing him. But yeah, I think we'll hear a lot more about this, and it doesn't. I think it was expected previously that he would get the new contract. I think we're talking about a sort of a 7-8 year contract at the club, and really making him a symbol of the new Chelsea, and that looks like that's gone awry. And I think we said on a previous show, didn't we, he might just be one of those players that for his own sake might just get to the point where it's like, I could probably do with a bit. I mean, he seems to get a lot of criticism from Chelsea fans online, certainly, you know, managers keep picking him, but people don't seem to like that. He might just be one of those who thinks, do you know what, the time's right, I'm ready to, you know, a little bit different sort of circumstances, but a little bit like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at Arsenal, you know, previously, where it was like, it always felt like, he might just become, you know, the sort of the real star of the show at Arsenal. He never quite did it. And then it got to a year and it was like, you know what? Actually, I think my career will benefit from a change in scenery and a new challenge, if you want to call it that. He might just be in the same circumstance. So I think one to keep an eye on, definitely.
The flip side on it again, just to go look at it, is like, he's an England international. He plays every single game, so he wants paying. That, because he's probably seen all these lads walking in the door, like 20 of them or whatever they've signed, and gone, why are they all on much more money than I am? I suppose the other point would be, well, if Liverpool won, the Liverpool are going to have to make him that kind of offer as well. And it's whether they see him in that light. Is he worth making, you know, is he a superstar sign who you give that 200 grand a week or whatever to? Because that's a decision that he would have to make, because you're guessing that would be the kind of stuff he'd be looking for.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I suppose I imagine Oxlade-Chamberlain's on decent money. You've catered, obviously, in that position, so you're losing those wages.
Yep.
in amongst that.
Jude Bellingham might be taking both of them.
yeah, true. maybe. But you know, if he's the player you want, or if he's a player that you want, then yeah, you when you move clubs, you tend to have to pay, you know, more in terms of wages than maybe a club that was going to keep the player would pay. But by all accounts, I think it's 75,000 a week. I'm sure that I've seen that figure put out. You know, it doesn't have to be. If Liverpool want to double his wages, that doesn't make Mason Mount. It makes him a decent high earner, but it doesn't make him the sort of a structure busting sort of earner at Liverpool. So they can still sort of give him a very tempting offer and a very good salary without, you know, going to Mo Salah territory.
Yeah. Absolutely, we'll keep an eye on the Mason Mount one. I want to speak to you about Ruben Neves now. So the report in Spain, obviously he's been linked with moves away from Wolves. It looks like at this might be the time where Ruben Neves gets a move away from Wolves. Yeah, I was going to say he scored against us, which might have boosted his transfer fee, but everyone scores against us, so maybe it didn't. But yeah, the report in Spain was that Barcelona are showing an interest in him, but also Liverpool, Man United and Newcastle. So there's a lot of teams sniffing around him. It feels like it might be a little bit agent-led, this, in terms of trying to get him a move away from Wolves, finally. We know Liverpool have been interested in his teammate as well. Mateus Nunes, which maybe, I don't know if that complicates things or whatever, especially in terms of Neves trying to get out to Wolves if they're already losing another one. But this lad, he's been someone who's under contract till 2024. So again, there's decisions to be made on him when it comes to the summer. Again, another one where you probably don't want to let him go into a final year, really. But does that? I can't quite see the fit, if nothing else. I think he's a good player, but personally, I don't see him fitting in at Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm the same. Unless he were to sell Fabinho, say, and go down a little bit of a different route. I mean, obviously, on the a looming shadow, is Wolves could go down, couldn't he? So that would obviously, he would definitely have to be sold if Wolves were relegated. I think they will stay up, but they're still in that mix. I do think he's a good player. He's one of those players that he's a really good footballer, isn't he? In the sense of, you know, if you're not on it, he can play around you, and he's got a nice range of passing, and he's smart. And, you know, I haven't seen him do that too many times that he did against Liverpool, but you know, when you're 2-0 up and sort of playing against Liverpool at that point, maybe you can afford to push the boat out a bit. You're right. Yeah, I'm not sure about the fit, because he's a deep line midfielder. He's a range passer, isn't he? He's someone who's, you know, spectacular shots from outside the box, and you know, diagonals and that kind of thing. And Liverpool sort of use Trent for that kind of, you know, change of play, or they use the centre backs, don't do it, Van Dijk plays. So I'm not 100% sold on that. Obviously, his agents, George Mendes, as a lot of Wolves players' agents is. I think Nunes is a more, Mateus Nunes, that is a more live target in that sense. But you'd expect, I mean, he probably feels like a little bit like someone like James Ward-Prowse and Wilfred Zaha. He feels like a player who's probably been there a year too long or more. You know, it feels like, I don't want to say suspicious, but I always was thinking, why haven't you moved? You know, like sort of, why are you
James Ward-Prowse? Why are you still there?
Why are you still there? Yeah, you know, and it's, let's say James Maddison stayed another year at Leicester, you'd be like, what's missing there? You know, what are clubs sort of not seeing there? Why have you been allowed? You know, and he does feel like that. It does feel like this summer is probably the summer you'd say, well, come on, mate, you've got to move now. Like, you know, you've done enough time there at Molineux, been a very good player for them, their captain, you know, led them, didn't he, up and then kept them in the Premier League for a number of years. So he's a good player, but yeah, I'm not, especially with Bajcetic emerging and that kind of, you know, if you can get Fabinho back playing, I'm not sure there's a great need for a player like Neves. I think there's a greater need for a player like Nunes or Mount, or, you know, more of a runner and more of a sort of an engine, as opposed to a Xabi Alonso sort of style player who sits deep and, you know, dictates the game that kind of way. So we'll see. But yeah, I'd be naturally sort of, okay, I'm not sure.
He's another one we spoke about Mason Mount before. He's another one. Ruben Neves, like, he's younger than you think because he's been playing for years. He's only 25. He falls into the Mason Mount category because you've seen him since he was a kid. You're thinking, oh, he must be getting on a bit now. And actually, no, he's probably getting to what is the prime of his career. All these reports coming out now, again, there was talk that he nearly moved a couple of years ago and Arsenal was sniffing around at one point and stuff. But this, it does feel like, yeah, like there's someone trying to engineer, Mendes or whatever, trying to engineer a move for him. And it meant people like, if Wolves are going to have to sell him, and this could be Wolves living, like they want to boost that price up as best you can. It feels a little bit more of that than actual anything of real substance in terms of Liverpool, at least.
Yeah, I'd say so. Listen, I haven't heard anything that I've asked about Neves in the past, not particularly recently, but he's obviously been, he's a name that whenever Liverpool are sort of linked with midfielders, he's sort of, you know, if you ever do one of them things where it's like 10 midfielders Liverpool could buy, he's probably a decent one to just throw in and say, well, Ruben Neves is at Wolves. I've always been given a sort of a, not for us, you know, in the past, that is, and I understand why, for the reason we just discussed. But we'll see. You know, listen, if Wolves go down, then he's going to go somewhere, you'd imagine, cheap, with a year left on his deal. And
I think he's going to Newcastle. Just screams Newcastle.
But a little bit, you know, you look at him, Bruno Guimaraes, and, you know, I mean, Longstaff's doing really well for Newcastle, isn't he? You know, possibly. I mean, United doesn't feel like the move for him, you know, linked with that. Barcelona, yeah, possibly, but, you know, they've got some good midfielders, Barcelona.
They're doing all right, aren't
they? Yeah. I don't know, it's difficult, but I don't know, Liverpool doesn't jump out as one that's saying, he'd sort of go right into that Liverpool team. You know, anyone would go right into that Liverpool team the way they've been playing recently. But if you're talking about a Liverpool team that's functioning and on form and really playing well, it's hard to see a Ruben Neves sort of type player without changing an awful lot else around it.
Yeah, if Liverpool are going to sign a Wolves midfielder, you think it might be his mates.
Yeah. I mean, he's been playing sort of a bit further forward, hasn't he? Almost off the left. Liverpool could do with a few players who play off the left.
Another one, yeah.
Yeah, just join the stable. But yeah, I mean, I do think his sort of profile, if you want to call it that, as a skill set, I do think that suits Liverpool a little bit better than a Neves. But I've been wrong before. I didn't think Liverpool would go after Luis Diaz a year ago.
Cody Gakpo was in this boat.
I didn't. I mean, we didn't really talk about him, did we, in the sort of start of the derby game, but what a good second half in particular we saw from him. First time I think we've seen sort of, okay, I think I heard Jamie Carragher sort of say on commentary when I watched it back, he said, now he's got his goal, now we're starting to see what he's about almost, and I hopefully again we see him build on that. But yeah, Neves is, you know, one to what have we got? You got the probable maybes and the probably nots. I'd put them in the probably not.
Yeah, I think.
Hey guys, hope you enjoyed that clip. Yeah, Mason Mount and Ruben Neves. If you want to watch the entirety of JNO Insight this week, head on over to redmenplus.com right now. And what I'll do for you is I will make you a little deal. So if you go over there, sign up as a Redmen Plus club captain on a monthly subscription. When you get to the payment screen, if you enter the code Neves, N-E-V-E-S, we will give you that subscription for 99p a month for the first 3 months. So rather than a five a month, 99p a month for the first 3 months. Absolute bargain. Go and get yourselves over there, redmenplus.com, and check out the entire episode of JNO Insights. See you in a bit. Thanks to me, and thanks to Neil. Yeah, nice one. Hope you enjoyed that clip. Right then, moving on, it's Expert Insight time. Each and every week, Dan Club gets in touch with an expert in a particular field and gets their thoughts and, more importantly, their insight and their actual knowledge from people who know exactly what they're talking about. This week, Dan spoke to Mark Carey. Mark is a data analyst for The Athletic.
Mark, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing, mate? You good?
Good, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Cheers.
Oh, no problem at all. It's our pleasure. Yeah, we're here. Like I said, we're going to talk about Will Spearman and also data in football as it's becoming more and more prevalent, of course, in the modern day, it seems. And Liverpool have been at the forefront of that, I think it's fair to say, for quite a while now. And obviously, Will Spearman's promotion is into the role of Director of Research ahead of the departure of Dr. Ian Graham, which was announced earlier on this season. He's leaving the club at the end of this season. So, yeah, let's start from the start, really. Spearman has been working as the lead data scientist at Liverpool for some time. I think March 2018, he joined the club, am I right in saying? Is this, or will this, be an easy transition for him into this new role?
I'd say so. I mean, I think it is important to kind of promote from within, given given how successful Liverpool have been over the years. It's always good to have kind of fresh faces, but kind of within that director of research role of kind of leading things up. I think it's almost like the boot room style that Liverpool have obviously been famed for. It's good to kind of have that initially, and then I'm sure that they'll bring someone else in. They may even promote within to make, you know, a lead data scientist from someone who's already at the club as well. But I think they'll find a recruitment a member to recruit in some role to add to the team. But I think that it does make a lot of sense given, as you say, how much experience he has from working in and around the club for such a long time. I imagine it'll be kind of more of the same, really. He's obviously very well versed in the statistical models and his contribution in that regard, which I'm sure we'll come on to.
Yeah.
But I think it'll just probably be more of the same, but just kind of overseeing the operations as much as anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to have somebody who doesn't need to be shown the ropes, if you like. And when it comes to the football club and the workings and the ins and outs, he can very much step into that breach, you would imagine, and hope. And I think it's actually what Liverpool hoped for when appointing from within, with Julian Ward taking over sporting director for Michael Edwards. He's also leaving at the end of the season, of course, so it hasn't potentially worked out like they might have hoped. Is promotion from within commonplace in this sort of role, would you say, then? Do you think you alluded to it there, clearly the better option, but is it the most regular option that clubs tend to take?
Yeah, I'm not too sure in terms of from a data perspective. I'm not too sure necessarily. I mean, it's a growing part of the game within football clubs. So I think a lot of Premier League clubs even now still have kind of one man bands or one woman bands in terms of small data departments who sometimes are just a single person. So I think Liverpool, as you alluded to at the start, are kind of leading in that regard to have multiple people within their team. So in terms of kind of promoting within, it would be an expansion often from a single person in a lot of clubs. So Liverpool have a luxury in that regard that they're able to choose from so many different people. But I think you make a good point about the disruption going on with, obviously, Michael Edwards leaving, Julian Ward's about to leave. I think he's just finishing his notice, isn't he? That this is the time to have something that's, you know, a settled team as much as possible. So again, I think it's important in that regard to at least keep things as calm as you can, given, as you say, that Liverpool aren't exactly going through the easiest time at the moment.
No, I think that's putting it mildly as well, to be honest with you, Mark. And it is nice. It's so strange because normally such backroom roles, you wouldn't almost place so much importance on them, but there is so much upheaval at Liverpool. And also, Jurgen Klopp has been at pains to sort of credit the people behind the scenes for our success, that even when the announcement, which should be as almost as minor as this one, like Will Spearman getting promoted, that shouldn't be a story in the circles of Liverpool, but it is. Do you think this is a bit off off-piste, really, in terms of my agenda. Do you think that just shows the importance and how important this data science model is becoming and how pivotal it's been to Liverpool, I guess, moreover? Do you think that shows just how crucial it is?
I'd say so. I think, it, as you say, it's something where, from speaking with the guys at Liverpool, I've had, you know, the fortune to be able to chat with some of them at conferences and things like that. And I know that they're such lovely guys, first and foremost, but they don't like to be in the spotlight. And rightly so. They obviously like to contribute towards the success of the team, but they don't want to take all of the credit themselves because they're not the ones who are obviously on the pitch themselves. But I think internally, Liverpool, all members of staff at Liverpool know just how important data is in that regard, from a tactical perspective of just how much throughout the season they, you know, you can inform what's going on the pitch, but obviously recruitment being key to that, of all of the coups that Liverpool have got in terms of, you know, straight after the Champions League final, getting Fabinho, who not many people would tell him to be, the player that he's obviously then gone on to become, players like Diogo Jota, etc. It's these statistical models that kind of shine a light on added value where maybe there's wouldn't, you know, a lot of clubs around Europe would go for the shiny player that everyone's talking about. And that's where Liverpool obviously had the edge financially as much as anything to operate in a way that will, you know, optimize their finances. And I think it definitely doesn't go unnoticed from within. And as you say, it's starting to go more noticed externally as well. And these people, these members of staff are actually getting the credit that they deserve, as you say, the likes of William Spearman from 2018, I think Ian Graham, you know, a couple of years even further than that. So talking about 7-8 years worth of hard work going towards Liverpool's success, arguably the most, well, one of the most successful periods in a couple of decades at least.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No two ways about that. And it is fascinating how we are learning the names of these people more and more. And it just goes to show, I mean, I guess from a Liverpool perspective, like you touch upon there, it has been so important to our success because we haven't exactly spent the money of some of our rivals, so sort of gaining their marginal advantages and being smart about your recruitment and looking at things in a slightly different way has been absolutely pivotal. And looking at things in a different way is something that William Spearman seems to have done throughout his career. Just on him a little bit more generally, he's an American Harvard Uni graduate. He worked for a performance analytics company, Huddle, I think I'm right in saying, and he transferred his passion for American football into, I want to say soccer, but I'm not. I'm going to say football, into football. He had a PhD in physics, and he also worked for the European Organization of Nuclear Research before joining Liverpool's research department in March 2018. Liverpool, I think part of their success, Mark, under the FSG tenure, if you like, has been appointing best in class. Does he fit into that category, I guess, is the simple way of asking the question.
Well, yeah, it's a simple answer. He absolutely does. I mean, the CV that he's got, you just listed it there, that there's fewer people qualified to be in the lead data scientist position that he obviously had for a long period, never mind the director of research. So, I think it's a real advantage that, from what I understand from speaking to him and seeing interviews and things, that he's grown to love football. But I don't think he was a football fan or a mad Liverpool fan from a young age. I think that's fair to say, but I think that's a massive advantage in that there's that element of objectivity. Of course, you're going to, in statistical analysis, you're going to have an objective view on things, but I think almost coming at it from a perspective that he sort of finds, I've seen interviews with him, he finds the sort of the patterns of space and his model pitch control, which we can come on to, really fascinating in that regard from a physics perspective, and having that, you know, that perspective that isn't led by, I just want my team to win on a weekend is a real advantage, because you can take out that emotion and really think, how can we optimize space? How can we optimize, you know, recruitment and finances, etc. So from an objective perspective, as I say, I think that there's few people better qualified in that regard.
Yeah, certainly seems to be the case. And as you mentioned there, his pitch control model sort of is, I don't want to say career defining because his career is still ongoing, but it kind of took him to the place he is now. It was seen as pioneering. He's been described as a new breed of data scientist as well. Just explain to myself and, of course, our viewers and listeners exactly what that model was, because I've seen it featured on Training Ground Guru as well. It's a sort of heralded invention, if you like, of his now. So just explain to us what it's all about.
I'll do my best because it's quite a tricky one to sort of explain sort of verbally, because it is intrinsically quite useful to see visually. But I mean, I'll kind of read out the quote as well that he says. He says it's the probability that a player can control the ball, assuming it was at that location. So essentially it's splitting up the pitch and looking at it, kind of heat maps of regions of that pitch that the team or a player at any one point versus their opponent are in control of. So it's using physics and statistics to say that, okay, if the ball was to be in a certain place on the pitch within the next few seconds, who would be the first player, or which team would be the one to dominate that space and get to the ball first? And obviously the more pitch that you control, the more dominant you are, you know, within the game. So again, I think that's where at the tactical level, on a game by game level, it's really useful to see how you can maximize, you know, control of the pitch against the opponent. But it can also look at an individual level using things like off ball movement, off ball runs, to see which player is kind of adding value to a certain move, to a certain action within the game from the team outside of your own team, to look at it from a recruitment perspective. Who is that player who's adding value that you might not necessarily see in your typical event data, as you say? So things like shots and passes, obviously, above and beyond that, how can we actually look at the value of a player? And that's how, as I mentioned before, Liverpool do get the edge in that regard, by kind of looking far more under the bonnet than the sort of the typical data that we see, you know, on the TV.
Thanks to Dan and thanks to Mark for that one. Right then, Newcastle on the horizon this very weekend. A huge game for Liverpool. Yeah, if they want to get themselves back in that top four race, really, they probably need to go to St. James's Park and win. Newcastle are obviously flying at the moment. They're having a really, really great season. A little bit of a wobble, to be fair, but they've got a cup final on the horizon. They're currently in the top four. They've got loads and loads of money to spend. They've got loads of good players, a good manager as well. So, yes, Steve Plunkett for Opposition Preview this week spoke to Lee Ryder, journalist extraordinaire, covers Newcastle. He's been covering them through the good times and through the bad times. And, yeah, here is what Lee had to say about Newcastle and this week's upcoming games.
Newcastle's a completely different proposition. How's things for you? What are your thoughts on all things Newcastle so far this season, and in particular the game that's coming at the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, really. We haven't lost a Premier League game since Liverpool inflicted that injury time defeat on us in August. And the season really has been everything you could ask for. You know, no more defeats in the Premier League since then. Just the one defeat. We've only conceded 13 goals, which is very unlike Newcastle, because traditionally we have been regarded as a team with a sort of dodgy defence down the years, and we've been absolutely rock solid at the back. So no problems on that score in the league, in with a shout for Champions League place, which is beyond what anybody expected this season. No one was expecting probably not even a European push, let alone Champions League push. So that's all positive. And then the big thing is obviously reaching the Carabao Cup final, which is amazing for Newcastle. We haven't been to a final for 24 years. So a chance to win a trophy. But I think everybody knows we need to improve a little bit in the build-up to that game against Man United.
Yeah, so obviously went through a real purple patch in the season where you're winning home and away. Just of late, perhaps, dropped a little bit of the impetus of Manchester United as a result of stretched away a little bit into third place. And obviously the result last night has absolutely played them into a title race. What's the reason behind that? Why do you think Newcastle just dropped off a little bit? Because it was going so, so well, wasn't it? And then the last couple of weeks, perhaps not as the results that you were looking for?
Well, we've kind of reverted to what we were doing at the start of the season, which was drawing a lot of games. So not getting beat, but picking up a point. And we've done that five times out of the last six Premier League outings. So that's probably why we have slipped off a little bit. I mean, I watched the Man City Arsenal game last night, and my feelings were we could really be in this title race had we not through so many games. But it's hard to level any criticism at Newcastle, because they're punching above their weight really this season. What I expected, I was expecting, you know, probably a mid-table season and possibly a cup run, which we've got the cup run, more than a cup run, getting to the final. And we're all in a good commanding position going in that last 15 games. So look, for me, I think Newcastle will get into Europe, but it's going to be which competition is it? We'd love it to be the Champions League, but it's funny, I was talking to one of the players after the Bournemouth game, Fabian Shaw, and I said, look, do you think that now you've got your Man Cities and your Liverpools going into the sort of spring, the European sort of time, European participants, is that going to make a big difference? And I was expecting to say, yeah, it will, because we'll have 3 weeks and those teams won't. But he said, to be fair, he was respectful about it. He said, look, teams like Liverpool, they're used to playing in Europe. They're used to being in the Champions League. They're used to the short turnaround. And he doesn't see it as being a big difference. It's going to boil down to quality. And I think, personally, I think Liverpool's quality will shine through in that last third of the season.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we're getting some bodies back now, particularly up front. Jota's back in the mix. Van Dijk's back in the mix. Diaz isn't far away. I think if we can get a situation where we can play Diaz, Jota and Salah in games, our pressing in the front three will return, because at the moment, Nunes and Gakpo don't do that in the way that Klopp would like, and it sort of unhinges the system a little bit. So, yeah, I think it's pretty... You're right. We are used to playing it every 3 days. We thrive off the intensity. So when we did the things that we did, winning the European Cup and winning the league, the games come in every 3 days. We're a help because it keeps you focused. It keeps you motivated. It keeps up your momentum, and we were strong. It's not playing... The World Cup probably didn't do us a favour. Some of our players don't look like they've had a break. But obviously the Everton game at the weekend, midweek, allows us to remember what it's like to win a game. So that's been tough for Liverpool, certainly in 2023. That is indeed our first win of 2023. I think from my perspective, going to Newcastle, as you pointed out before, defensively really strong. You've got a goalkeeper that isn't a fancy goalkeeper. He does exactly what he's expected to do. He's very effective. I think he's got the most clean sheets in the Premier League this season. So if you look across your back four, I mean, Kieran Trippier is obviously a name that springs out. They're just really organised, really effective defenders. They're not big-time Charlies. They're not massive names in world football. It's a really, really good, effective unit. And I think Eddie Howe takes a lot of credit for that. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said there almost. And I mean, Kieran Trippier is, as you say, a key figure in this team, because he's come in, he's organised it. He's been the captain in every game. I'll give you a small quick example. We played Tranmere away in the League Cup early rounds. Eddie Howe decided to rest a few players. One of our defenders got injured. We were getting beat 1-0 off Tranmere, believe it or not. And Trippier came on as sub. Within minutes, he'd won a free kick. Within seconds, they'd equalised from the free kick, and Newcastle went on to win the game. The first half an hour of that game, they were all over the place. It looked like it was going to be a real shock on the Wirral. Tranmere beating Newcastle, but Trippier comes on and reorganised it. And he's one of the key men. Nick Pope's another one. He's surpassed everyone's expectations, replaced the popular Martin Dubravka in goal. He's been brilliant this season. But, you know, I could probably name other examples. Joe Linton, Bruno, who's suspended for this game. And then you've got, you know, people like Miguel Almirón, who's having the season of his life, getting into double figures. And he's been a key man. He's gone off the boil a little bit in recent weeks. Back at it at the weekend, scoring a goal, but he's had a little bit of a rut, and it's good to see him back on the score sheet. So there's so many positives around this team. As you say, they're not a team of huge names. They're a team that are punching above the weight. That's what I said earlier. And in games, there has been a bit of sort of gamesmanship. Newcastle have been, that's what the problem was at Anfield. That's why it boiled over. So I think you're going to be up against a team who know how to deal with the big teams and try to run the clock down where they need to. If they need to take the sting out of the game, they will. And I think it'll be a very intriguing contest on Saturday night.
Yeah, interesting. And you mentioned the name there, Miguel Almirón, who has gone from being someone who promised to deliver, so not really hitting any type of consistency or any real form. This season, he's been a real inspiration, and he's often been the guy that's turned games or won games for you. What would you put that down to?
Well, it's really interesting. It was Rafa Benitez, who I know you know very well, signed Almiron, and the reason he signed him was because he wanted Newcastle to have a bit more of an attacking edge. It didn't happen for him when Rafa was there. It wasn't through anyone to try, and it was just the player didn't settle in. Then Steve Bruce come in, and Steve Bruce was getting bits and pieces from him, but he wasn't hitting top form. We knew he was a player. But I think under Eddie Howe, what he's done is he's reduced the emphasis on the defensive demands of an attacking player.
Yeah.
And he's playing with a smile on his face. He's still doing all the defensive work, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's getting it rammed down his throat as much. And I think he's been encouraged to get on the ball more, take a shot more, just do little extra things. And Eddie Howe got an arm around him, and he's certainly getting the best out of him. To have 10 goals with still a good chunk of the season to go is a very special achievement for him. And the good thing with Almiron is I think fans love him. He's a quiet lad. He's unassuming. He's not one of these players who you'll see going on Instagram, you know, having the big nights out or being in fancy restaurants. He just wants to take his little boy to the park with his missus, go for a coffee. He's very, very quiet lad. And when he's on the pitch, he really makes it count. So that's why he's such a crowd favourite.
Yeah, thanks to Steve and thanks to Lee as well. Yeah, obviously the chief Newcastle writer for the Chronicle. Lee knows what he's talking about, so you do want to listen when he speaks. Right then, final clip I've got for you this week. It's another deep dive. It's Chris Pajak. It is Josh Williams at Distance Covered. The lads are experts. They love the stats. They love the tactics. They love the analytics and everything in between. You guys have really, really taken to this show. As have I. I've learned loads and loads and loads of stuff. Let's learn some more with this week's clip from the deep dive.
Today we are going to be talking about Will Spearman, the soon-to-be Director of Research at Liverpool Football Club. I've got Josh Williams with me as always. Will Spearman, currently the lead data analyst at Liverpool. He's been here since 2018, Josh. He's a really interesting fella to dive into, I suppose, isn't he? And that, you know, there's quite a lot of stuff of him talking on the internet. There's videos that he's done. I would recommend watching them. Mm. There's papers that he's written that you can try and understand if you want, because the paper that I was trying to read, I lost my head on it big time, like, and it's just fucking physics, and, yeah. And it's like, how does this correlate to football? And it's like all these mad signs. It's sort of like something out of Goodwill Hunting. Do you know what I mean? That he's writing on the board, and you're like, oh yeah, of course,
yeah.
Why isn't that the case? But as someone who's interested in this type of stuff, I tried to plod through. Fuck me. It's really difficult and just way over my head. And he's obviously far, 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 far cleverer than I am or ever will be. But, like, fucking hell. Like, it is fascinating. And I suppose to start with Will Spearman's story, we really need to talk, again, go back, much like we did with the first show, actually, this week, is we need to understand what role he's taken over and who, I suppose, Ian Graham is, the current Director of Research at Liverpool Football Club. So what do you know about Ian Graham?
Yeah, well, we did a show, didn't we, a few months ago about Ian Graham. I think I appeared on as a Zoom kind of guest. But Ian Graham is Liverpool's current Director of Research, and he's been in that role for over a decade now. When he first was appointed at the club, Liverpool didn't have a data science department. He was the first scientist to be appointed by the club, and to an extent, really, the first scientist to get involved in football.
As a former, what was he, physics? Polymer physics wasn't for him. I mean, he was quoted as saying in my research.
Yeah, well, this is a common theme with these scientists. Usually they kind of get PhDs and things like that, and then they realise that academia isn't for them. And they want to go and kind of deconstruct an unanswered problem. And if you look at football as a problem, it's just a random, baffling sport, isn't it? You know, things can just happen. It's not like baseball where everything's like plays. Dedicated set plays. It's just such a random sport. So Ian Graham was kind of brought on by FSG mainly, because based on what they'd done in America, in Boston, with the Boston Red Sox, it was all through like Moneyball and things like that, statistics. using evidence to sign players rather than just cliche lines. Like, have you seen the scene in Moneyball?
Yeah.
Where they're just talking about like a hitter's jawline and what his beard looks like and things like that as a reason to buy him. Liverpool wanted much more evidence than that. FSG wanted much more evidence than that. And Ian Graham, since like 2005 really, had been kind of assessing players, not according to what he saw with his eyes, but the player's value in terms of points over the course of a season. What a player is worth to his team in terms of points.
Is this why, sorry to interrupt, is this why Liverpool spent so much on a goalkeeper in Alisson Becker?
I think it is, yeah. And it's why Liverpool spent so much on Virgil van Dijk. And
because to some that looks crazy.
Yeah.
But actually, on a player-by-player basis, the goalkeeper might be the biggest increase in points that Liverpool had available to them.
Exactly.
Because
yeah,
we had a fucking dodgy goalkeeper who was shipping in goals for fun, two of them, actually. and then you move, you spend what you need to spend. Do you know what I like to liken it to? Because I've heard Will Spearman talk about this and I've read quotes from him and I've read Ian Graham and stuff. When I went to Africa on my honeymoon, this is a stretch, like I admit.
I didn't expect you to say that.
So when I went to Africa on my honeymoon, they have a bartering society, like, culture over there, and it's completely alien to me. There's price is the fucking price, and what I realised is I hate bartering. So I would walk in and I would go, I think it's worth that much in my head, and that's what I'll pay. And they're like, okay, sounds. I'm like, shit, I've gone well over the top there. But it didn't matter to me, because what they value that was much lower than mine. But what I value, it's what's important. And I think Liverpool have a value for a player that if it's in line with what their club is asking, they have no problem signing him for that amount of money.
Well, this is where the data science comes in, because historically you've had scouts, right? Scouts are deemed to be experts when it comes to player analysis and things like that, and he might be. But if you were to say to any scout, right, tell me about... I mean, let's use his name. I try to avoid his name, but let's say Jude Bellingham, right?
Yeah. You're doing a terrible job of it. Like, we've mentioned him in every single show, I reckon.
I know. He's my phone screen, I think. My phone cover screen. but if you say to a scout, describe Jude Bellingham, why is he good? You know, why should we buy him? They'll talk about what he's good at and the fact that he's a leader and he's captain of Borussia Dortmund and all this stuff.
Great jawline.
Yeah. But if you were to say to that scout, right, sound, how many points is he going to be worth to us? The scout will just, it'll just be a blank stare, I don't know. And it'll be, at best, an educated guess. The data science guy would put a number on that based on some kind of algorithm or whatever he's concocted to determine what this player's worth in attack and defence in terms of scoring goals and not conceding goals. And that was what Ian Graham has established for years and years, constructing a data science team, mainly of his mates from Wales. They're all Welsh, and it's not a coincidence that.
Apart from Spearman.
Apart from Spearman, who is a bit of a outsourced genius, if you like. Ian Graham watched him give a talk at the Opta Pro Forum in London in 2016, and at the time, Spearman was talking about his revolutionary new concept.
Ball position using spatiotemporal tracking, obviously. Because how did we all miss it? I mean, I think I might have just gone to the cinema that week. And there's me missing out on, let me just get those words right again in the right order. Ball positioning using spatiotemporal tracking.
Well,
pass me by. It's like when you find out Peter Kay tickets went on sale on a Friday at 10 a.m. and you only woke up at 11. Like, this is how it was. I was so close to getting tickets to the ball position using spatiotemporal tracking talk.
Cheers, Chris. Cheers, Josh. And thanks to you guys for listening. Yeah, some amazing content there that you've heard. They were only little snippets as well. If you want the entirety of each and every one of those shows in your native podcast app, very, very simple. Head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up. And like I say, if you sign up as a yearly club captain, use that weekly code, you'll get it for half price. If you are a Spotify user or listener, and that is the only app you use, Well, if you search for Redmen Plus podcast in the Spotify app, you can sign up directly through there. Now, we don't control that, so I can't offer you no discounts, I can't offer you no offer codes, but if you sign up through them, you can pay them directly on there, and you too will get all the shows in podcast form in your Spotify app. You don't get the videos, you're going to have to go over to Redmen Plus and subscribe if you want those, but if you are just a staunch Spotify user and it's Spotify or it's nothing else, then yes, you can search for Redmen Plus Spotify, Redmen Plus podcast on Spotify, and you can sign up through them if you want. But if I was you, I'd go to redmenplus.com, use that weekly code, get it for cheaper, and get the videos as well. Right then, that's it from me this week. Like I say, hopefully you enjoyed the show. Hopefully you've enjoyed all those clips from some amazing, amazing guests and some amazing, amazing Liverpool fans. Let's have a good weekend. Let's hope we're talking about another win at the end of the weekend. And yeah, I'll see you all soon. Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.